Hey there, this is Paul Roberts of the Security Ledger. If security and the Internet of Things are your thing, I wanted to let you know about a great event Security Ledger is hosting on June 19th in Boston. It's the fifth Security of Things Forum. It's a full day of great content on securing the Internet of Things. If you're interested in learning more or attending the forum, point your web browser to the event website, securityofthings.com, to learn more or to register. Hello, and welcome to the Security Ledger podcast. I'm Paul Roberts, editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger. In this episode, number 97, we welcome University of Washington researcher Kate Starbird back into the Security Ledger studios to talk about her latest research, examining the web of bloggers, news websites, conspiracy theorists, and government actors who are targeting human rights workers in Syria. But first, the end times are upon us. This Friday, May 25th, marks the go-live date for the European Union's General Data Privacy Rule, or GDPR. Like a train that's been slowly coming down the track, GDPR's arrival has been anticipated for months, if not years. Still, only a small minority of firms say they're prepared to meet the regulation's stringent requirements to protect the data of EU citizens. That's especially true here in the US, where deregulatory fervor and a lack of a comprehensive national data privacy law have left consumers and the public at the mercy of ham-fisted data brokers. The latest example of that is LocationSmart, a third-party location tracking firm. It emerged last week in a series of stories by Krebs on Security, ZDNet, as well as Motherboard, which noted that the firm had made it possible to track the location of millions of U.S. mobile phone owners with nothing more than their cell phone number. The culprit, a vulnerable web-based application, but also a culture of lax data security and data privacy that has scared even the security researcher who discovered it. In our first segment, we speak with that researcher, Robert Zaw, a graduate student at Carnegie Mellon. To start off our conversation, I asked Robert about how he came to look at the LocationSmart web app and what he found.
My name is Robert Shaw. I'm a PhD student at Carnegie Mellon University in the Human-Computer Interaction Institute. I will be graduating very soon and starting as an assistant professor at the University of British Columbia in computer science. I saw a recent news article from ZDNet saying that somebody using the Securus web interface had been improperly accessing call records. And in the article, they mentioned this company called LocationSmart. And they said, hey, LocationSmart's got this web demo where you can, you know, punch in a number, it'll phone you, and then, you know, once you give consent, it'll track your location. And I thought to myself, hey, this is interesting. Punch in any number, and, you know, it'll just, with a simple call or text, it's going to track that number. I wonder if that call or text is actually strictly necessary. So I started digging into their website, and I looked around, and within 15 minutes of me, they're going onto the site and looking around, I found what looked like a real security vulnerability. So that's sort of when the floor dropped out, in some sense, when I discovered that this was really a much bigger issue. This free tool, basically, how it was intended to work was you would sign on, you would punch in a number, you'd say, track my mobile. It would send you an SMS or a phone call. You would reply to that phone call, and then they would start showing you your location on this website. And what I found was that you could actually just skip the consent part entirely, and you could track anyone's phone without any sort of consent being given.
So talk about how you were able to do that and where their security model, such as it was, broke down.
So the basic gist was I discovered that by essentially modifying the stream of requests that they were making to their internal API, so that, you know, their website sort of has a feature on it that lets you track these phones, and it's supported in the back end by this programming interface, this API. And I found that by modifying the stream of requests going to that API, you could just simply omit the part where it asked for consent, and then secondarily trick the programming interface into believing that consent had already been given. And so by combining those two parts together, it was essentially possible to simply punch in a 10-digit phone number and get that phone's location without that phone ever knowing, without the owner of that phone ever knowing that their location was being tracked. That's basically it.
Just to understand, Location Smart is kind of a reseller of this data, and the data is obtained from the major wireless networking providers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, and so on. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. And that list also includes TELUS, and Bell up in Canada. My understanding of this is that they obtain the data from their so-called wireless partners, and then upon request, we'll give it to anybody who asks very nicely. And this has been going on for years.
Man, where do we even start with this? So some of the stories that have been published have shown how law enforcement has been using this data in some cases, obviously to identify or track suspects. But presumably, it isn't just being sold or resold for the public good, public safety. Really, anyone with a bank account can get this data. Is that accurate?
My understanding is that they will sell to marketers who they claim, you know, they'll check that the marketers have obtained consent. But my research demonstrates how weak that consent can possibly be. And for things like roadside assistance, for things like E911, et cetera, those are things that essentially they sell the data for any location-enabled purpose. The only bar they have is that they claim that they require either a law enforcement reason or informed consent, neither of which, in my case, are applicable.
This informed consent, I mean, as we understand it, is that them basically saying, well, you'll get a text message and you'll have to approve the sharing of your location data? Is that what they mean by informed consent, or is there more behind it than we're seeing?
In their location demo, that's the case. In some of the applications that they tout, that's the case. But that doesn't always have to be the case. Imagine, for example, downloading a free game off of Google Play or something that contains within its terms and conditions, we'll track your location and sell it to third parties, right? And that's considered informed consent as well, because it's the terms and conditions that you sign up for. So that's, you know, the terms that they apply can be extremely broad. And, you know, you would have no indication essentially that some random thing you downloaded that was tracking your location through this. Although, as demonstrated, you know, you don't have to be compromised by some semi-malware spyware app to have your location tracked all the time without consent.
And this application that they've developed, is this more or less the back end to all of these tracking services? In other words, would their business partners be linking their own applications back to this web application that you found these vulnerabilities in?
That would be my expectation, yes. The companies that, you know, are Location Smart's customers effectively would be using such a kind of programming interface, yeah,
right,
to access location data. Although presumably, you know, they would have, you know, access to bulk location data, for example, you know, being able to ask for, you know, thousands of phone numbers at the same time.
And this particular flaw that you found, it seemed to key on what format you requested the data to be returned in, whether it was returned in a JSON format or XML format,
I guess. XML format, right.
Yeah. Any idea how that happened?
This is a kind of an elementary data validation failure. And my guess is basically, you know, they said, okay, well, our for the purposes of this demo, we've got to code in this thing that requests a subscription. And so the, you know, whoever implemented this went off and duly said, okay, we'll add the validation to, you know, to the status request, and then we'll sort of add this validation to this, you know, to the location request. But they probably only added that to the side of it that was used by the actual interface, the web interface, and they forgot to check that it also would apply to the JSON request, because that was an unused feature of their programming interface. And this is a fairly common kind of bug. You know, essentially unused features that are exposed to remote users, to remote attackers, are very, very frequently the source of bugs, because those are untested, unintentionally exposed to the wider internet and to users. And essentially, very, very frequently, the kinds of bugs that you would expect can lurk in those kinds of things. So I you know, when I do security testing, I often will look for sort of unused features like that, or sort of unintentionally exposed interfaces like that.
And in this case, how were you able to discover it?
I was able to discover this by basically looking at the request, capturing the request, and then modifying those requests as they were being sent, and seeing how the server responded to modified versions of my requests. So, you know, one of my modifications was to basically change the format. And then I discovered that essentially when I changed the format and then requested a phone number that hadn't been authorized through the API, that it was still returning location information rather than returning a failure message. And that's when I realized that this bug was completely exploitable. At that point, you know, I reached out and got a little bit more validation from people I knew, and then sort of tried to break this open. It's quite frightening. I mean,
you could have plugged in really any phone number at that point and been able to track its location.
Literally any phone number. I was sort of on a big email thread with people from US CERT trying to validate essentially what was going on and trying to figure out what was going on. And they would just give me, they'd say, okay, well, we just got a bunch of people together in a room, or rather we got a bunch of people together that we know, you know, here's six phone numbers, go off and then test them. And I'd go bang, 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 here's your addresses, you know, and in most cases, those are accurate to within 200 to 400 feet. And it was working for basically any number I would punch in. Yeah. So it really was sort of panopticon.
Gosh, it just seems like there's this kind of weakest link phenomena that happens with so many of these tracking applications where, you know, even if the application that is collecting the data is secure, and we don't actually even know if that's true in this case, down the chain, there's a weak link, and whether that's on the back end or in transit or what have you, and the data kind of just gets barfed out.
Right. The fundamental problem here is that this company has access to data in the first place. This is the kind of data that should be treated with high levels of security, you know, that isn't just handed out willy-nilly to third parties and then resold ad infinitum. This is the kind of thing that needs to be sort of very carefully safeguarded. I think the locational privacy of, you know, upwards of 200 million Americans here was just open to anybody through a very simple interface. And that should, you know, even if that was a secured endpoint, who knows when hackers might have breached the actual, you know, website? Who knows when a mm-hmm. disgruntled insider would just run off with the API keys? These are the kinds of things that you do not want to trust to, you know, to some third party to resell and to sort of trust their word that they will be secure about it. This is the kind of thing that we need to be keeping absolutely, well, ideally that there will be laws to actually protect the privacy of this information.
Do we know how long this test application was up and running on the website?
The Internet Archive demonstrates that it was up from at least January 2017. So that's what, like 16 months. But their internal documents on the website suggest that there's a screenshot of a version of that website from September of 2016. So it's been probably 18 months, maybe longer. And who knows how long it was up before then. And this is something that anyone could have gotten to just by filling out a contact form and going to the URL. So it could have been open for 18 months. It could have been open for many more years than that. Who knows? So I have not contacted the company, to be very, very clear. I coordinated disclosure through US CERT. And when the vulnerability was patched, then I coordinated with Brian Krebs to break the story.
But the problem, at least the one that you identified, has been fixed.
They fixed it by taking down the entire feature, yes.
And again, this is a pretty cursory review by you. There could well have been additional vulnerabilities either for the demo app or the actual app that we just don't know about.
Just to give you an idea, I did find other vulnerabilities already that could be chained into something bigger. For example, the application would hand out tokens that would identify your session, and those tokens were not random. Those tokens were based on the system timestamp. And so they were highly predictable, and a predictable token means that it would be possible to essentially eavesdrop or hijack another person's session. So that's another vulnerability. I don't mention that sort of publicly because, you know, it's overshadowed by sort of the primary one. But who knows how many more bugs like that could have been lurking in the code. And these are just things that I found with a cursory review of the code, of the system. You know, they're not even the only location provider. So it's not even clear how many other location providers could have bugs like this in their systems, you know? This is a real wake-up call, I think. You know, honestly, this whole episode is a little bit, it was a bit of a shock to me, really, that I would have assumed that in a functioning sort of tech economy, that this kind of thing wouldn't be possible. But instead, I find that the telecom companies are happy to sell their data, this private location data, to these third-party resellers. These third-party resellers are happy to sell it down the road. And there doesn't seem to be anybody in charge here, anybody sort of looking at this and saying, hey, wait a minute, there's something totally, totally wrong with this situation.
Yeah.
And that's what really worries me, is basically, this bug is one thing, right? This bug is clearly a big issue that has been potentially violating people's privacy for a long time, but it's a bug. How many more of those are out there? Software bugs are rampant in the industry, right? And these companies are not taking that seriously, I don't think. You know, and yeah. The telecom companies certainly aren't taking this seriously enough, I don't think. This is a real wake-up call. This is one of those things that I think, you know, if people don't start paying attention to this now, we're just going to see much more severe violations of people's privacy down the road. This is part of the privacy erosion. And this needs to, in my opinion, this really needs to stop. Just imagine, you know, till this vulnerability was fixed, I had the ability to punch in any U.S. person's or a Canadian person's 10-digit mobile phone number and find out exactly where they were to within 200 feet of their current location in real time. I could watch people drive around. I had a friend, he was driving around Hawaii. I could watch him driving around the island. I mean, that's just completely unacceptable to me, completely frightening to me. The data should not be out there. That data should just not be out there at all. I really, really, admire the European approach. This, the GDPR stuff. I know it's almost like the GDPR apocalypse for companies, but you know, people at least who deal with European citizens are now having to take privacy and security much more seriously because there are real consequences for messing up. And I think that is a very good approach. I don't know if the same thing will work here. But I think we need to start exploring things like that. We need to start exploring things like real consequences for exposing people's private information. We need to explore things like making sure that certain classes of private information are just not available or, you know, are tightly controlled from the outset. Until we start caring about that as a nation, I guess, you know, it's hard to see how the change will happen.
Robert Jha, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us on the Security Ledger podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for this interview. Yeah, I'm happy to chat anytime.